The following is a North Carolina Baptist resource. For more, visit ncbaptist.org.
What's the fastest growing population in North Carolina? What's the fastest ethnic population in North Carolina? Not Hispanic. Nope. Bingo. It's South Asian. That's exactly right. They are the fastest growing population in North Carolina. If you don't believe it, you come to my area and you're going to see the we've got a city that's full of South Asian Indians. It's just the most amazing that God is bringing these people. How many languages do you believe are spoken in the school system in North Carolina? Anybody want to take a guess? Wow, I don't think it's quite that many. But that's a lot. I don't think it's that many. Is it 309? I'd have to go back and look at my figures. Suffice it to say, we've got a lot of different people in our state that are from different areas. But not only that, we've got a lot of cultures. And so our time together is going to be, it's really interesting. God's given me the opportunity to connect with people that I would have never connected with in my life. Now, this is not about me, but my wife and I have been on a journey for over 7 years. We have a ministry to international students from India in our home. We're not connected with any church. We just simply felt God leading us to do that. And it actually connected with Sammy Jew when he was on the collegiate team, but he's now one of my team members. When he was on the collegiate team and doing international ministry in the Raleigh area. And most of our students are from NC State University. Now, these students are grad students and doctoral students. And by the way, we connected with Indians, South Asian Indians. And over 7 years, we have built relationships with over 90 students that have come into our home. We have built relationships with them. We know where they are in this world. We still connect with them, many times have Facebook chats with them or Skype chats with them, or we texting with one another. We had the opportunity to go to India 3 years ago. You could say it was a mission trip. We went to a Hindu wedding. How many of you been to a Hindu wedding in India? It was a 5-day experience. And I'm going to tell you, it was an experience that God opened my eyes for the first time of the darkness that is in this world. But not only that, before that, we were in Abu Dhabi, the United Arab Emirates, and a predominantly Muslim country, and experienced that with another couple of our Indian students that we were visiting while we were on our way to India. We were able to go to a Muslim temple. We were able to go to a Hindu temple, and we were able to see the vastness of lostness in this world. But what we saw most was that God broke our hearts even more for lost people. I had never wept over a people in my life until we were in India. And my wife and I, on two occasions, were holding each other and sobbing in one another's hands because we love Indians like they're our brothers and sisters. So God's been dealing with me for quite some time in this whole area of diversity, this whole area of cultural understanding, and how to connect with people who are different. As a matter of fact, it was over a year ago that I read, this is a business book. I read this book. Six Stages of Cultural Mastery by Ricardo Gonzalez. Wow, when I read that, I said, oh my word. Our people need this. And I began to look, as I was reading this, some things began to jump out at me. He's quoting scripture here. He's telling a story from the New Testament. Little did I know that Ricardo was at one time a church planter in Puerto Rico. But because of some cultural perceptions, when he went through a nasty divorce in Puerto Rico, and Christians and missionaries turned their back on him, It scarred him, and he left. But God had something in store for this man. And we connected with Ricardo and have been on the front lines now, because this is a process that you're beginning to see show up not only in university systems, in government agencies, in health care and health reform. Man's talked to FEMA on several occasions. He's got people around this nation who are now beginning to back this whole six stages. Why? Because he has a heart for people breaking the barriers of culture and racism and leading to one thing in mind, and that's love, endearment. Simply let you know, our scriptural foundations are built upon the great commandment, Matthew 22, 37 through 40. The new commandment, John 13, 34 through 35. This new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. And then the Great Commission. Now, could this be said that our outward expression of love and fellowship with others is a reflection of our inward expression of love and fellowship with God? Let me repeat that again for you. Could it be said that our outward expressions of love and fellowship with others is a reflection of our inward expression of love and fellowship with God? I'm going to give you a quick overview of culture very quickly. You've got a little, you can fill in, if you're kind of the fill in the blank person, you're going to love this part. By the way, we're going to get back to my culture in just a moment. That's when the interaction begins. By the way, if you were here in this last class with me in this room, here's the man he was talking about right here. Keith Jefferson is the man that Russ Reeves was talking about. And it's all, Keith is a good friend of mine. So here's what you need to know about culture. Culture is the DNA of a group, of an organization, of a society. It's simply that. It means that the culture is what gives life to these entities. It's the lifeblood. So without culture, there is no meaningful group, organization, or society. And you're going to hear me say this, and you may hear saying this, these two words we'll say over and over. Culture is, period. Culture is. It's no more, it's no less. Culture is. Now, secondly, one of the most difficult things we need to do regarding culture is to get neutral. What does that mean? We must stop judging other cultures in terms of morality. Cultures are not right or wrong. They just are. They form over time. Once I make a moral judgment on another culture, I take myself out of a position to be able to effectively work with people of that culture. Did you hear that? Once I make a moral judgment of another culture, I take myself out of position to be able to effectively work with people of that culture. Now, folks, this lady here talked about three cultures in the county in which she lives in. The Lumbee Indians, the African Americans, and the white Americans, Anglos. Three radically different cultures, but they are what they are. The culture is. The question is, you want to know, what could I do? What can we do to break those barriers down? Well, we'll move on. Maybe you'll find this. We cannot successfully lead people we are emotionally resisting. We are emotionally resisting. So if you're resisting the Me Too movement emotionally, you will no longer have any influence. If you emotionally are resisting immigrants, I hate the word illegal aliens. If that's how you describe, I think we're all illegal aliens, by the way. If you're a Christian, let me just throw that in. Mm-hmm. If you're emotionally resisting them, You'll never be able to connect. This is a deep truth. We all do this. We make judgments on people and cultures. But I want to encourage you to shift out of high gear and into neutral. This will allow everything to slow down. Now, this is one of the, and Ken and I, along with 10 others, have been trained in cultural mastery by Ricardo. This one area is probably the most difficult, because now you're going to have to wrestle with your biases, your bigotry, your prejudices, stereotypes. Your stereotypes, all of that. And folks, here's what I learned about Neil. They are so deep-seated that you don't even realize it, and sometimes it comes out at the wrong time. Have we not seen that lately, by the way, in the media and in this nation? It doesn't take much anymore, because it will come out. And that's one of the things we want to help. We want to help you not find yourself in those kind of positions. And I have been in those kind of, I've made those mistakes. I don't know about you, but I have. This is a mental and sometimes spiritual discipline that takes time to develop. But that's okay, because we're going to all learn this together. Okay, here are the five elements of culture. Quickly. And they are. Number one, beliefs. Number two, values. Number three, norms. Four, symbols. Five, language. Okay, very quickly. Number one, beliefs. The best example of beliefs that we know of is what is found through our churches. We have every culture will have its belief systems. All churches may have their creeds or their doctrinal positions. These are expressed in written belief systems. All cultures have beliefs. In other words, this is how and what we think. How and what we think. Some groups write them down with great diligence and cares, and others leave them undocumented. But this doesn't mean they are non-existent beliefs. But number two, values. What's valued or valuable in one culture isn't necessarily considered a value in another. You got it? I found that to be true. What's valued or valuable in one culture isn't necessarily considered a value in another. Values is what cuts to the core of meaning or meaningfulness. What's valued is it, this is why you must stay neutral, because your culture necessarily isn't right and theirs wrong, or vice versa. They just are. Staying neutral helps you in this particular area. Now, Audrey, cultures that value high levels of personal independence are low context culture. If you don't leave here with anything, I want you to leave here with an understanding of low context culture and high context culture. Because I see this is one of the areas that really confuses or keeps the church from being able to connect to a culture, and it's or you to be able to connect with another person. What do I mean by high context or low? Cultures that put a high value on relationships are called high context culture. Cultures that have high levels of personal independence are low context. Some cultures value high levels of personal independence. Now, what does that mean? What does that look high levels? That means a culture that is very task driven, that is very time driven, that is very much about doing something, and it is about doing it on time. It's about success. It's about the task, the job, the work. What is it? What would you say the United States is? High context or low context? Low. You're exactly right. We are a low context. Therefore, a high context is a culture that's built upon relationship, deep relationships within that group of people. Family. Now, for example, when we went to India, we met We didn't meet just the nuclear family. We met people that were called aunts and uncles, and they weren't even blood related. But in their mind and in their culture, they were, because they lived in that kind of high context culture. By the way, what culture is determined by time? Time. It's the low context. Therefore, why do you think what are some cultures that are not time driven? Yeah, Hispanic would be one. Yeah, doesn't that drive who? Hey, what? Who, Keith?
African-American.
Really? African American? Yes. Doesn't, and it drives some of us completely nuts. Oh, well, you've got to do it here. Can you begin to see the clash of cultures taking place? And we want to try to minister to people of that kind of a culture by now imposing upon them and saying, your culture is wrong, my culture is right. See the difference? See what's happening here? That's what I want for you to understand. Next, norms are expected behaviors from the people within the culture. They're highly solidified beliefs. They become set in stone. They may not be written, but they are certainly expected. Expected behaviors from the people within the cultures. Families, which are a small culture within itself, have norms and expectations as part of that culture. So what were the expected norms? What were or are the expected norms in your family? Someone, what are the expected norms in your family?
Education.
Thank you, Tom.
Remember your family.
My mom used to always say, remember your Ledbetter, because nobody else will forget it.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
Respect for elders.
What's another within your family?
Children were saying.
Thank you. I heard that one. So you begin to see what that looks like. By the way, organizations have their norms. Mm-hmm. Churches have their norms. They may even be called constitution and bylaws. Oh, did I say that? Symbols allow people to self-identify. Depending on which culture you come from, the same symbol can create joy, chagrin, positivity, or negativity. You know the thing that occurs to me? Let's just take the symbol of a rainbow. Huh? That's God's symbol. But what does it come to represent today? And I can't even use a rainbow. I love rainbows.
LGBT.
Yeah, LGBT. LGBTQ+. You got to get that in there.
But then we think of the covenant.
Yeah, yes. But here's the thing. It's the symbols. It's some people burn the U.S. flag. Others revere it. Well, we've got your sports teams, your college teams. This is why companies invest a lot of money. It's the branding. It's your brand. It's your identity. Language is the medium through which we express ourselves. All right. It's our verbal and nonverbal. Do you know more people in the world are first language Spanish speakers than they are English speakers? I think Ricardo maybe tells this story, and this was just an aha for me. A lot of our friends, a lot of our Indian friends, speak 3, 4, 5 languages. That's nothing. I barely speak one, you know. But I'm amazed, and we've got several bilingual people at the Baptist building as well. But one thing I learned about the heart, how important that heart language is. There is a study and I think research, and it's been proven that when a person of ethnicity finds themselves in a traumatic experience, for example, let's say a Hispanic who's bilingual, speaks both English and Spanish. Let's say they are in a horrendous car accident. and they are now being transported to the hospital, they do not have the ability to speak in English. They only can speak in Spanish, their heart language. Proven fact. Isn't that interesting? I found that very, very interesting. It doesn't matter if whatever their heart language is, they find themselves in a very traumatic experience. When I went to down east, where did we go? Wallace. To work with in Florence last fall. And a team of us went down from the Baptist building, and we had gone to the area, to the play, to the camp, or where the I think this was a Missouri Baptist was working, and we went to get our assignments. You know what the first question was asking me? Does anybody in your group speak Spanish? There were three of us guys. Well, none of us spoke Spanish, and I asked, well, why is that? Well, we've had these requests, and I forgot how many weeks now. It's numbers of weeks that nobody would take an assignment. Why? They couldn't speak Spanish. I looked at the person. I said, "That's not going to stop me. Give them. I want them." All I had to do was pick up my telephone, call one person at the Baptist building who serves on our team, one of our ministry assistants who's bilingual, and she was like a godsend. And for most of that morning, she interpreted over the phone. She would call. We kept things going, and we were able to minister to these people because no one even took the time to learn how to speak Spanish or who didn't know how to speak Spanish. But I wouldn't want to let that stop me. I know you know somebody who could speak Spanish. At least I think you should. So here's first level, stage one. Here's what you're going to learn. And I'm going to turn it up quick. We're going to do this exercise, and then I've got to turn it over to Ken. Right? Six stages. One, you're going to learn that the six stages. And they build upon one another, by the way. You don't go from stage one to definitely stage six. And what I love about this, we at the Baptist Building, we are about preparing, training, equipping, and resourcing people to do the work of ministry. And in this case, to be able to assist churches in disciple-making and impacting lostness. And we believe within the church strengthening team that the pillars of the church are built upon love and unity. Love and unity. And as a result of that, building relationships with people, whether it's within the body or outside the body. Remember the great commandment and the new commandment? Love one another and love your neighbors. Relationships. By far, who has taught you how to build a relationship? Education, number one. Now, so this is what I'm going to do. You've got about 3 minutes, and I want you to find someone you do not know, and I want you to pair up with them, and you are to share. And if you haven't done this, you can do this on the spur of the moment. Share, this is my culture. Your culture, your own particular culture. Share some things that are on, especially at the top level. The top one that's about, what are the seven areas of education are, what are they? There they are. Food, music, sports, religion, clothing, language, and celebrations. Share one of those seven things. And I'll give you 4 minutes. That's 2 minutes apiece. Go find someone you do not know. Let's stop. Let's just stop right where you are. But because you're going to stay still connected to that person. But let's debrief just very quickly here for a moment. Stage one in education. We cannot lead people to the highest levels until we know them at the deepest levels. We cannot lead people to the highest until we know them at the deepest levels. Number two, if you're not curious, you don't care. If you're not curious, you don't care. You see, I believe, maybe I should stop this recording. I guess after 28 years, you get a little bolder in your speech, don't you, Tom? Yeah. When we get as old as we do, get a little bolder. You know, I believe the church has been doing it wrong. And what I mean by doing what wrong? Missions or being missional or trying to connect to their community. You see, here's the thing. We've been trying to connect to a group of people in our community that we know nothing about. So we try to engage them, and we don't know anything about them. As a matter of fact, I think what it's, I've asked many a pastor, well, tell me, what are you doing to your community? What do you mean, what am I doing to my community? I said, well, did they ask you to do, did you work with them? Are you working together? Or is it that you're just infiltrating that community, doing something to them? How do you feel when somebody does something to you and not with you? You see, it's exactly the same thing. We have been trying to engage a community and we go in with an I don't care attitude. Because, see, if you truly cared and valued a person and the Imago Dei, the God-given purpose and strengths and giftedness of that person, you're going to care and you're going to be curious. Rather than telling people what they should think or how they should feel, ask them for their take on things and for their views of the world. Stephen Covey said it this way: seek first to understand, then to be understood. Get that? Seek first to understand rather than being understood. I think that's so very important. In our relationships, and the seven areas of any culture. We've done this exercise before. This is the first time we've done the exercise in this way. Because we're going to get right to stage two in just a moment. We can't spend too much time because we spent 8 weeks in this stuff. I mean, we went real deep. And I'm going to tell you something, folks. We had the most diverse team of people I had ever put together, and they're leaders within churches. I had two Hispanics, two African Americans, two Asians, two women, two millennials, and a few old white guys. And God, and we were in two small groups, and God revealed to us our own deep-seated biases and prejudices and stereotypes and so on, and there hardly was a week that did not go by that someone was not confessing to another and weeping. And I was one of those and didn't even realize it. I saw transformation taking place in people's hearts and lives. Where am I? Getting to know. So when we did this exercise before, and we kind of would go, here are things that you should be learning about a person here in these seven areas. Okay? You see, you try to engage people, and a lot of times, without education, you have nothing to talk about. But you're trying to engage with them. You have nothing to talk about. Think about that. But this one area, starting here, instead of engagement. See, our churches have tried to start engagement rather than here. Education, learning all you can about a particular group, culture, whatever, whoever you find yourself, Lumbee Indians, African Americans, and the Anglos. And look, we don't even get along with one another. So when we give this exercise and we didn't put any parameters on it and said, okay, now do this, connect with one another. It got real churchy fast. I failed. We failed. At least I thought was. You see, if I'm going to connect to the Asian Indian that I see every time I go to the pharmacy at Harris Teeter, Shraddha, I've got to know something about Shraddha. I got to know about her family. I got to know that she now has a 1-year-old son. I've got to know what their food. I got to know all that, because then I can continue to connect. And one day, we will have Shraddha, her son, and her husband in our home, so that we can go deeper and connect deeper. It's building that bridge. So, I don't want the churchy stuff. I want you to ask, what is your favorite food? And that's where I go, because we've been eating. My wife is a phenomenal Indian cook. Oh, my word. We were coming back from Western North Carolina, and she said, I'm craving Indian food. She's a phenomenal Indian cook. Do you know, when we have Indian students in our home, if they're brand new, one of the first questions we ask them is, would you tell me, what is the dish that you miss most that your mother would cook for you? Do you know what dish would be on the table the next time that person came into our home? You see, because I care and I love our students. So what did you learn? Just very quickly, tell me something you learned about the person that you connected with. And then we're going to go, bam, into stage two.
We had differences, but we also had similarities.
Okay, good. You had some differences, but you had some similarities. The similarities is what we're going to get to in just a moment. But tell me what you learned. What's an interesting fact that you learned about your new friend?
That he grew up on a farm.
All right. What's an interesting fact?
He likes fishing, auto racing. Bullfighting.
Bullfighting. That's interesting. Yeah, Someone else. What's an interesting thing that you learned about the person next to you, or that you connected with?
Didn't celebrate birthdays growing up.
Wow. Wait. Come out. What could you do now? Do you think she celebrates birthdays now? Wonder what it would look like. See, here's a bit of information that Ryan now has learned about Linda. It's not unlike this story. I also recruit for a leadership group here in North Carolina called the Tar Heel Leadership Network. And I was talking with a pastor that I wanted to be in the group, and he lives in Wilkesboro. And in my discussion with him, I learned that a year earlier, his mother had died, and this greatly affected him. Greatly. He loved his mother dearly. But one thing that he shared with me was that his mother, at his birthday, would always bake him. It was some kind of cake or pie, and I can't remember now. It's been a few years ago. I stored that in my mind. You know, because his birthday was coming up within 2 weeks. I wonder what it meant to him when he, on the day of his birthday, and I have several pastor friends in Northwest, and I called this real good friend of mine and said, I want you to do something for me. I've ordered this cake from this bakery in Wilkesboro. Would you please pick it up and just deliver it to him and say, happy birthday? And I said, I don't want him to know it's coming from me. I just want you to do that for me. See, Ryan, what would that mean to Linda if all of a sudden you show up on her doorstep on her birthday, even with a cupcake and a little candle, and say, happy birthday, Linda? Don't you think that would build some cred, some endearment? I do. See, it's those little things that will give you the opportunity to have gospel conversations. And here's my big aha. See, over these 7 years, gospel conversation doesn't take place just one time. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take place just two times. It is a never
ending conversation, because the prompting of the Holy Spirit will tell you, will show you exactly when is the right time. And by the way, we not only have it on our walls, our mission statement, by the way, is 1 Corinthians 2:8. If you want to look at that, you'll see we have that on our wall with pictures of our Indian students around it. We have we live it, we share it. We even, when they graduate, they even get a gift of the scriptures from us. Why? Because we love them. All right, so now, here's your next, very quickly, Ken, I'm sorry. He said he gave me permission. I want to give you three potential barriers we face about learning someone else's culture. Number one, bigotry. Bigotry means an intolerance for other people's opinions. Got that? Boy, does that not describe our country today? An intolerance of other people's opinions. Taking dogmatic viewpoints or judgmental postures takes us out of a position to lead people who are different from ourselves. Now, I want you to catch this last one. How true this is. Our problem is not that we disagree. That's not our problem. Our problem is that we are highly disagreeable. Problem's not that we disagree, it's that we are highly disagreeable. Second, a barrier to education is insecurity, because our identities are wrapped up in culture and we may fear learning something new. And third, last barrier is just pure laziness. Yeah, it takes work. It will take work, folks, to build a relationship, doesn't it? Why do you do? Tell me why you did that, because I'm very interested. We are lazy people. And if it requires something of us to build a relationship with someone, more than likely we're going to default to that laziness. So now, I want you to connect with the person. And let's see, what is your name? James. James. James, actually, he had already jumped in on number two. The second stage is, engage. Engagement. Thank you. Engagement. The principle here is connecting. Connecting with people requires education and engagement. Now, the engagement is now you actually have something to talk about. You're asking the right question. You might have learned something about their culture already. You may, and by the way, it doesn't mean other ethnicities. It could mean other Anglos as well. Millennials is a cult. Are you a millennial?
I'm on the border. I don't know.
You're on the border? She's on the border. You're a millennial?
Just okay.
Do we have any millennials in here?
All right.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. All right. You guys are a culture within itself, all right? And by you're very special. But here's the point. All right, see, so we don't make jokes about the other culture, except for the millennials. right, I got it. The point I'm making is, I don't remember what the point I'm making is, we've got to connect with people, learn as much as we can, and then we engage, because now it's going to give us something to talk about, and here's what you're going to talk about. I want you to find something that you have in common that you could actually do together. Find something that you have in common that you could do together. Go. I'm very curious as to find out what is it that you discovered that you could actually do together. All right. Whoa. Wait a minute. Let's see. Now, here's the part of cultural mastery, though, that we learn. Because it's not just about asking one question. It's about taking those questions and learning how to dive deeper. You see, because you're starting here,
But we see, we can't hide, we can't lead people to the highest level until what? We know them at their deepest level. So right now, it's just a shallow thing. But then I'm going to find out, okay, Rex and James, exactly where are you going to eat? Where would you be going to eat? What are you going to be eating?
Hamburgers and
French fries. Tell me about that. The hamburgers and French fries. What comes to your mind when you hear about hamburgers and French fries?
Teenager.
Tell me about that. Teenage years.
I grew up in Southern California, and we had a place called A&W Root Beer Stand.
Yeah.
Okay. And so we would always stop there and eat a teen burger with root beer.
Okay, I want you, because you got to see this, folks. You've got to see just what happened by asking a couple of other questions. This man gave me more information. Did you hear? See, I didn't, you, by the way, you never ask a person where they're from. Why? Why would you not ask a person where they're from?
It shouldn't matter.
It may matter. Okay, what kind of judgment? Because it is kind of a judgment thing.
Well, it might dictate what they think or what their attitudes might be.
The important thing is you got to become neutral. If I brought Sammy Jew in here, that's the last thing Sammy Jew wants to hear. Where are you from? Because he is South Korean. Is that right? Yeah. South Korean. He's mistaken for all the other kind of Asian cultures as well. I mean, you just name it, he's been mistaken that. So again, Gene, that goes back. You're already making a judgment call by asking. But by asking the question I did, where did you learn this guy's from?
He's a surfer from California.
I didn't have to ask. Now, we might ask the question, if you came to our heavenly banquet, because we did some of this in heavenly banquet at the annual meeting, of tell me, where have you lived the longest in your life? And sometimes that will bring up that answer, but we always begin to delve deeper in. So James just let it all spew out. But you begin, that's information you begin to collect. If you're like me, folks, and when you get to be my age, memory's the second thing to go, I got to go back and write it down. I used to carry around in my car a little black book. So here's Starbucks, here are the baristas, here's the one, and I describe them. I write down what I learned that particular day. If I'm in another store, my wife does it on her phone. And we're calling people by name. We know where they're from because they have shared that with us. We just didn't ask it. We begin learning things about them.
But if you're like me, you forget where you wrote it down.
Well, that's another issue, James. I can't help you with. Good. What's another one? What's another thing that you learned that you could do with someone?
Cook.
All right. What are you cooking? Where and what kind of food? And
we're going to cook banana pudding.
Oh my! What comes to your what comes to your mind when you think banana pudding? Here's interesting. Boomer and we're not sure exactly. She doesn't know where she is, but probably she's on the line. But we have several. Okay, so here's generational issues. You see, generations are a culture as well. Mm-hmm. See, we have this thought. We're talking about people groups, period. People groups. Here are two different people groups. But they said banana. Both of them said banana pudding. That's crazy. So I've got to hear this story. Tell me about banana pudding.
Well, I related it to barbecue. Mm-hmm. And so there's other things that people like with barbecue, but that banana pudding happened to be her favorite. Then I asked her, I said, have you ever had tapioca pudding? And I never had that. And I'm like, well, that's my second favorite pudding.
Well, Kimberly, tell me about banana pudding in your life. What does that, what memories does that bring to you when you think banana pudding?
So my granny always made homemade banana pudding, and she taught my mama. She always made homemade banana pudding, so that was our big thing. And so whenever we go to like a big potluck or something, or in the summer, anytime we can find an excuse, we'll be making homemade bananas.
So this is something that's taken, actually this has become part of a culture within the family that's been handed down. Is that what you're saying? Mm-hmm. Do you have children?
Yeah.
And do you have a daughter or a son?
I have two sons and a daughter.
Okay, have you taught them how to make banana pudding yet? Good one.
I'm moving into her.
Me too. I love banana pudding.
I got to test hers out and see if it meets the requirement.
You know how we put the cookies on? They haven't gotten to the
cookies. Okay, good, good. Folks, when do you see how easy these conversations actually become? When you take this intentional process, here's what I want you to first. The first principle is we want to connect with people. We do that through stage one of education and engagement. Here's the other thing I want you to know. What's this right here? External, this is something you can see, actually do. Internal means there's going to be internal transformation that takes place. These first two are external. These are something you can do that doesn't actually require anything internal as of yet, because the relationship hasn't required internal stuff yet. But it's when you move to 3, 4, 5, and 6, and I'm turning it over to Ken here in just a moment. Next is empathy. This is the first internal. Empathy. Empathy means that you, how would you say it?
You feel, you become passionate about them.
You become passionate about the other person. Empathy. You become passionate about them. It's more than just kind of feeling what they feel. No. You are beginning to value them. You see their worth. You see, they are made in God's image. You have passion for them. That is an internal transformation that's starting to take place because you've gone to especially when you start cooking with one another, you start eating with hamburgers with one another. What's another thing that somebody could do together quickly?
Fish
together. Oh, my. Well, Jesus knew about that, and the disciples, didn't he? Empathy. Stage four leads to excitement. Now, what does this mean exactly? By the way, this is an internal as well. But at these two stages now move you into the second principle of create. Now that you have connect, you and by the way, folks, this is not about something me to you. If this is not reciprocal between two people, you me to you, you to me, you have missed something on one of these stages, and you need to go back to go. Do not collect $200 and go back to go, huh? Because it goes both ways, folks. It's got to go both ways. So that there's empathy there between the two of you. You begin valuing one another, and this moves to excitement because now you see potential and say, friend, this is something we can create together. This is something we can do together because there is some commonality. I am now seeing this in you. You're seeing this in me. I don't know what that is. That's where the Holy Spirit really begins to do the work. It could be something for the common good. It could be something for the school system. It could be something for the community. It could be something for a family. It could be something for them in creating a business. I don't know. But that's excitement, is that now we're going to create this vision together of what could be. A vision that leads to empowerment. Endear. Come on up, Ken. Empowerment and endearment. Empowerment now says, together, we're going to find the resources. That doesn't mean I'm going to shell out money to you. It doesn't mean that I'm going to do things for you. No, it means I'm coming alongside of you in this excitement, in this vision we created. I'm going to, it may be that I have influence and I can connect this person with this person over here that is going to make our vision come true. It's the resources that God's given you and others that are around you to empower that person. And finally, endearment. What's endearment? L-O-V-E, love. Love. If it doesn't move to love, well, just read 1 John. You'll get it.
Mm-hmm.
Ken.
Let me just summarize what has happened here. If you've seen Neil before, when I met him 12 years ago, he's not the same guy. I've been in culture ministry for a long time. And I thought something like this, but this is the packaging that I really appreciate because I've learned so much from this. I've seen the transformation again. So he is a living exhibit of what happens when somebody is willing to engage people. Now, we asked about the question earlier, too, because I'm guilty about this. I ask people, where are you from? Because that's normal, right? From another culture. But if you speak to a Hispanic today, they may not like to say yeah. Where you're from.
Good point. That's an excellent point.
Be careful. If you're a person from South Asian background, mm-hmm. if you're from Pakistan, they might think, I'm a bit terrorist. They might not say so.
Yeah.
The same. No, you really have good. No, the reason why you don't want to use that question, right? But you can get it by getting to know it. So quickly, let me share with you the rest of the stages here. I'm just going to give you an overview because I hope that this is going to be an appetizer. That's what happens. You know, when you go to the mall, they say, hey, would you like some barbecue stuff over here? You get a good taste of this if you want some more. So let me just share you quickly, all right? When you talk about empathy, he just asked me the word empathy over here. You heard the PowerPoint there, don't worry about this. It says, you need to be passionate about somebody. You need to understand how they feel. You need to understand exactly what it means for them to be able to bring back something from their life. When you start to do that, you start to make the connection.
Mm.
Yesterday I was in church, a lady saw me after church just quickly. She said, I noticed that you one of the first Asian people speaking in this church that spoke a good hope. I just want to talk to you for a few minutes. The moment I said, yes, I'm from the Philippines too, and I started to say, oh, she just poured her out. Like, here we are, people are going home. It was just us. He said, I want to talk to you because you understand what I'm going through right now. For the short time, she wanted to take us out for lunch already. Yes, I just met her, right? But I said, I'm sorry, I have another appointment. I'm missing for the few moments we were there. It grew from knowing her to the point I started to see what she said. I want to go farther than that. I'm just saying, understand. Let me go to the fourth stage. What is excitement? When you think about excitement, it's a feeling where you are really enthusiastic about that person. In other words, you are interested and there's eagerness there. You need to show to this person's life that you want to connect with them. That's what excitement is. What is it that they're excited about? The fifth stage over here is empowerment. Empowerment means that you put power into this person. In other words, you're giving power to this person for the reason that they can accomplish something. There must be something they want to be doing. He says, so how can I empower you? But here's the word. How can I resource you to make it happen? When you start to love somebody, you spend time with them, you're willing to invest in them. I heard what Neil said earlier, even buying a piece of cake. In other words, you're saying, yes, I heard your dreams. I want to be excited with you. Let's make it happen. You do something like that to this person. And I want you to tell your secret here. Another culture. And we got to turn this the right way. There's a word called indebtedness. When you do something for them, they feel that they're indebted to you for life. Because you help them. Now, some people can think like, wow, I have a messianic complex. These people help me. You need to turn that to the Lord. Said, I've been able to help you because God has helped me. You need to thank him because they will be indebted to you. I'm saying, folks, use that as a great means for the simple reason that what we're doing is not about us. We can point them to Jesus. The last one, endearment. And the reason why we embrace this book is I like you. I'm skeptical about anything that comes out like this. Oh, especially from a secular author, right? But no, no. When I read this book and he introduced it to me, because it ended up with love. It needs to be the love for people who are made in the image of God. I like what the author said earlier. When you start looking at people made in the image of God, it doesn't matter where they're from.
Mm-hmm.
Because you realize God loves this person. And he has a plan for their life to be able to be people.
So Ken, how could somebody, if they wanted to go deeper in these six stages, what would they need to do?
Yes. If you have the little next piece of paper there, I'm going to give you three things that you can do. Number one is that you can sign up for our cultural mastery training. August, it's right there.
Eight and nine.
Yes. Sign up for that. Go online, and you will get a great experience on how to be equipped so you can train other people. 2 days. Come in the first day to be trained. The second day, you'll become a trainer so you can help other people as well. Sign up for that. Second, if you'd like to be part of a cohort, an online cohort, let us know as well. Go to our website. We can be part of a cohort that can go online. And third, if you'd like to do something in your association in churches, we can do an awareness. Something like this, maybe a little longer. So people say, I want something like this. I want to be, I know this word, not enticed, right? It was, I want to taste. And we would like to have more.
Or taste it.
So in closing, I want you to share, for it's part of, if you look at the first page there, the word engagement here. Here's my challenge for you. Number one, you need to prepare. Mm-hmm. If you want to engage somebody, you better know what you need to be educated. For example, if you're reaching Southeast Asian Indians, who's the president of India? Who's the president of Mexico? Do you know they are? If you're dealing with Mexican folks right now, you don't even know what's the number one sports hero in Mexico? What about the Philippines? I'm from the Philippines. Who's our number one hero right now? Sports. Okay, I'm glad you better remind me about that.
It's gonna hit
you. You don't even know that. Boy, you're missing a great connection. You see what I'm saying? Prepare. Number two, you need to practice. It's just not only practice with somebody. You talk with somebody and say, hey, I want to learn how to talk to you. And maybe find a Filipino. Teach me some phrases. Practice. Third, it says here, you need to participate and try to be connected with them if you want to know their holidays. But lastly, it's not here. Take this as an opportunity to proclaim.
Amen. Do you see you? Thank you for coming today. God bless you and enjoy the rest of the session.